Well, the trauma of Egypt continues with more violence over the weekend, including the deaths of more than 30 prisoners in transit and attacks in the Sinai Peninsula. From an Irish point of view, though, the focus has shifted to the fates of the four Halawa siblings arrested in the Al-Fateh Mosque on Saturday. They're the children of the imam at the Klonski Mosque. And a Turkish diplomat has met the Halawis, as you heard there in the news headlines, and has assured the Department of Foreign Affairs that they're safe and they're in detention at Cairo's Tora prison. And also the Irish ambassador to Egypt has sought permission to visit the Halawis. Before that news emerged, we spoke to journalist Rebecca Collard in Cairo. I asked her about the general situation in the city and in Egypt, throughout Egypt, and also what she knew of the situation and the fate of the Halawa family.
They were among the protesters inside the mosque when security forces stormed it on Saturday, and they were taken into custody along with a number of other people. And now we know that the Irish authorities have been in contact with Egyptian authorities and have confirmed that these people are in detention.
And do we know where they are and in what conditions they're being held and at what risk they have been placed?
Well, that's unclear. The Egyptian authorities have been very vague about where they are keeping detainees. And of course, we had this story yesterday of these 30-something detainees killed while being transported to a prison. So, you know, the Egyptian prison system, the Egyptian security system is very poor and quite a dangerous place. But I think as of the last time Irish authorities had been in touch with them, they were safe and okay in Egyptian custody.
Now, in relation to the deaths of those 36 or so prisoners, it has been suggested that they suffocated in the back of a police van during an attack. Has that been confirmed?
Well, this is a very interesting incident. Usually when we have incidents like this where people die in custody of Egyptian police, there is some sort of other witness. But with the event yesterday, we basically only had the government account. This was on an area kind of outside of Cairo. They were heading northeast to a prison there. The only account we have is from the Egyptian government, the Egyptian security forces. And even then, we have two kind of conflicting accounts that came out right away about what happened. So one account is saying that they were attacked by armed men and fought back, and somehow in this, all of these detainees died. And then there's another account that says that they fired tear gas and live ammunition into one of these police vans. Now, I've seen these police vans many times. They are quite small, very small windows. So it is possible to imagine that if they filled that police van with tear gas, many people would suffocate. But to say that all 39 of them died in some sort of clashes or something like this seems very difficult to believe.
Now, you were at the Al-Fateh Mosque when it was stormed, when the security forces went into it. What did you witness there?
Well, I was there the day before, also during the clashes, and that was actually the field hospital. So a lot of people that were inside the Al-Fateh Mosque, when it came under siege by the Egyptian security forces, were actually either there because they were injured or they're attending to the injured. So doctors, pharmacists, medical students inside trying to help those that were injured in these clashes that were ongoing on Friday. And then on Saturday, as I arrived, things were a bit calm. And then all of a sudden, a barrage of gunfire outside of the mosque. And eventually, first, the security forces escorted out some women in the mosque. And then eventually went into the mosque and cleared it out of those people that were holed up inside.
Now, we've heard today, up to now, it would appear that the police have been handling most of the security operations, but it's being suggested today that the army might be moved in and that the army might be taking at least some responsibility for security. How significant a development is that?
It will be interesting. I think that we of course, you know, the army during the time of the rule of the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces, kind of as Hosni Mubarak was deposed 2.5 years ago now, the armed forces stepped in, the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces stepped in, and then at that point they were in control of a lot of things, so they were securing the streets. But when they withdrew and handed power to the now ousted President Mohamed Morsi, we kind of saw them them retreat from the streets. So letting police forces deal with a lot of this day-to-day security measures. But to be honest, in the last couple of weeks, here in Cairo, I've seen military as well as police in the streets, tanks sitting at the edge of the Tahrir Square on different areas in Cairo. And yesterday, as they organized these marches to go towards the Constitutional Court, it was in fact the army that was sitting outside guarding the Constitutional Court.
Now, attention is focused on Cairo in the main, but the Sinai, which it would appear, is slipping into anarchy. What's been going on there?
Well, you know, I've spent a lot of time in this area of North Sinai that kind of runs along the border with Gaza and Israel, and of course, as we all know, is a place where there's a lot of smuggling and lawlessness. And what we have this morning is reports that 24 police officers were killed overnight in an attack on a police bus. Now, this is a very difficult area, I think, for Egyptian security forces. First of all, the peace treaty with Israel basically means that they can only have a limited number of army personnel in this area along the border. And now Israel has allowed them at different times in the last 2.5 years to kind of step up that number because, of course, it's in the interest of Israel to have that area be secured. But it is still quite limited, the ability, and it's quite limited the number of personnel they're allowed to have there. And that, of course, limits their ability to control the area. And at the same time, the kind of indigenous population there, the Bedouin population, have long been kind of outsiders in Egypt. They definitely, having been there many times and spoken to them, many of them don't feel even Egyptian. They feel they're oppressed by the Egyptian state. They feel that they're neglected for economic opportunities, for development, that they're kind of cracked down on and oppressed by security forces. So this is an extremely volatile area. And unfortunately, what we saw today could only be possibly just the beginning of what will be more violence in this area of North Sinai.
There have been suggestions that the government is going to ban the Muslim Brotherhood. Do you take those suggestions seriously? Do you think that's likely to happen over the next number of days?
Well, we definitely thought it was going to happen yesterday. The foreign minister spoke in the morning again about the dissolution of the Brotherhood, about banning the Brotherhood. And this, of course, is not unrealistic. I mean, the Brotherhood has been banned for years and years under the regime of Hosni Mubarak and previously. This is, you know, Egypt's oldest opposition group, 85-year-old opposition group, the Muslim Brotherhood, and they have often been banned in Egypt. So it's definitely realistic, and the implications of that, I think, could be quite serious. Although with the latest violence, it seems that a negotiated or peaceful solution to this standoff seems unlikely. I think banning the Muslim Brotherhood basically will show them they will not be involved in the political process, which will only kind of make them more defiant. It gives them really nothing to lose but to kind of take to the streets more, and it will raise tensions and I think could lead to more confrontation and more violence. So this will be a very interesting development to watch in the next few days.
Would you expect a military response from the Muslim Brotherhood? Because according to the government, in arms raids across the country, weapons are being seized, weapons and ammunition and bombing equipment is being seized as well. So on that basis, the Muslim Brotherhood would be able to make a very violent response indeed.
You know, let me say something. I of course see these reports all the time that these protesters are armed, that they're firing back, and I do believe that to some extent that there are protesters among these demonstrators that are pro Morsi and anti-coup and Muslim Brotherhood protesters that do have weapons. But I myself have been attending these protests very often, and I myself have not seen any weapons on the side of the protesters. Now, of course, I cannot confirm that they do not exist, and I've seen the reports and I've seen video footage showing that they have weapons. But I think one thing that's really important to remember is that most of this information, what you're telling me right now, is coming from state media. Now, the state media, and to a large extent, also, the private Egyptian media has been basically co-opted by the military. So there is no unbiased media left in Egypt. So they're showing these pictures of arms caches and guns they're finding in Muslim Brotherhood locations or buildings or homes of Muslim Brotherhood members. We definitely need to look at these images a bit skeptically, because we don't know where those images came from, and there has been a narrative put forth by the media in Egypt since the ousting of Hosni Mubarak and the military taking control of the country on July 3rd, that this is a terrorist organization, that the Muslim Brotherhood are violent, that they're terrorists, and that they have weapons. These reports coming out of the state media just basically are not reliable.
Finally, the burning of Coptic Christian churches continues. Who benefits from this? I mean, it's being blamed on the Muslim Brotherhood, but would the burning of Coptic Christian churches be in the interests of the Muslim Brotherhood, one wonders?
I don't think it's in the interests of the Muslim Brotherhood. I don't think that they want, as far as if we're talking about the leadership of the Muslim Brotherhood and kind of their higher kind of echelons of organization, I don't think they have any interest in burning Coptic churches. Lots of times in protests, like for example yesterday when I was speaking to protesters, there's a lot of talk that no, Christians and Muslims are one hand in Egypt and we're Egyptians and all of this. But of course there's two possible scenarios. One is that of course that they cannot control everybody who is against the military, who is against this military coup, who is a supporter of Mohamed Morsi. So there are going to be people that do take this conflict in a sectarian nature, unfortunately, and that's very likely what we're seeing, is that some Islamists, not necessarily, they're not being told by the leadership of the Brotherhood to burn churches, but they're taking it upon themselves because there is propaganda being put out by the Muslim Brotherhood, Freedom and Justice Party, and other associated organizations saying that Christians played some sort of a role in this coup. So I don't necessarily think that the Muslim Brotherhood has anything to do with the burning of these churches, but possibly stoking of sectarian tensions, yes, with Christians. And at the same time, you know, when I talked to protesters yesterday, and I know this seems a bit far-fetched, but I'll just tell you what they had to tell me was that they believe that security forces are actually burning these churches to make it look like the Muslim Brotherhood or Islamists are doing it. And we have seen this sort of thing in Egypt before, just before the revolution started here. And 2.5 years ago, there was a bombing, if you remember, of a church in Alexandria, and that was later attributed to security forces rather than Islamist elements. So, again, this is a situation in Egypt where there's just so many narratives coming out, so many different stories about every event, that it becomes hard to tell who is telling the truth and what actually happened.